Every community has a place where people meet and stories are told. The East Coast has stoops, the South has porches, and in Alaska, we have Arctic entries.
Here, Alaskans share their personal stories, funny, sad, and sweet. These stories are originally told at our monthly event in Anchorage. At each live performance, seven people tell a seven-minute long, true story related to the show's theme.
I'm Jason Brandeis.
And I'm Rosie Robart.
Welcome to the Arctic Entries Radio Hour on KSKA, Anchorage. This hour of Arctic Entries celebrates Anchorage's centennial. From its beginnings as a tent city to its current status as a modern metropolis, in 2015, Anchorage turns 100. We've curated stories from several Arctic Entries live shows to create this special celebratory hour.
And as usual, all these stories were originally told in front of a live theater audience as part of our monthly Arctic Entry events.
But now we will start off our show with Anchorage musician Jared Woods and his song, Fireweed.
Keep putting me on, putting me on, changing lyrics to a song. Oh, the way you greet the sun, always laughing as we run towards the inlet, towards the tracks. Fields of fireweed will last till the snow creeps through the pass. Now the sun stays up late to the night, like it's staying out of spite. So we just stay out late to the night. We won't go down without a fight. We won't go down. Now it won't be long, it won't be long. Of you I grow quite fond. Oh, the way you put me on, always laughing as we run towards the inlet, towards the tracks. Fields of fireweed will last till the snow creeps through the pass. Now the sun stays up late into the night, where it's staying up out of spite. So let's just stay out late to the night. We won't go down without a fight. We won't go down. We won't go down. We won't go down. Like it's staying out of spite. So we just stay out late to the night. We won't go down without a fight. No, we won't go down without a fight.
Thank you.
That was Jared Woods, and you're listening to the Arctic Entries Radio Hour. Now, time for some stories.
Our first storyteller grew up in Anchorage. Later, she became a teacher at Chugiak High School and worked there for 24 years, serving as the advisor for the high school newspaper.
For some reason, that's kind of a fun fact to know before hearing this next story. Here's Gretchen Wemhoff live at the Alaska Center for the Performing Arts in February 2014.
My story is an experiment. It's an encounter with a different kind of Alaska wildlife. I'm going to talk to you about my adventure in dating Alaska men. In the late 80s, early 90s, I was 30. Now, don't do any math there. Okay. I was 30 years old, and I had a really good friend who was 39. And every Sunday night, we would go to Lamex or Clinker Daggers. I don't know if any of you remember Clinks. Yeah. And we would sit there and drink margaritas. It was kind of our reward for getting through the weekend, doing our stuff, and okaying Mondays tomorrow. And we would sit there and talk about guys and the problems that they seemed to all have in common. And I said, you know what we got to do? And I had a second margarita for this suggestion. It might have been my third. But I said, what we really ought to do is we need to put an ad in the personals. And at that time, the Anchorage Daily News had something called the Sunday Singles. And it was amazing. Now, you got to remember, this is before internet, before there were telephones. And we used mailboxes and typewriters and handwritten letters. And we decided that we would put an ad in the Sunday Singles. So we thought about it. Okay, and I was probably a little more adventuresome than my friend at this point, but we decided we needed a target audience. So we thought, well, you know, we're tired of training these guys. Why don't we go for those who've already been through Romance 101? Let's go for the divorced man. So we put together an ad, probably on the fourth margarita, that says 30-something, looking for sane, mature man who would appreciate an honest, fun-loving, occasionally emotional career woman. No photo necessary. Children optional. Non-smokers. And then I added, P.S., I'm allergic to cheese, because I did end a relationship because I was allergic to pizza. I didn't want any surprises for anybody. So we put this ad in the paper. It cost $28.60. I know that because just before coming up here today, I went through that ad. So that I could tell you the correct verbiage. Anyway, I would say in 2 days, we got two letters. Now, the way this worked is the ad would give you a box number. So someone would read your ad, and then they would write a letter and mail it to the Anchorage Daily News with the box number. And then the Daily News would either hold it for me or they'd mail them. And I think they mailed them to me. I wasn't going to go down there and pick them up. So they mailed these, and the first two letters, the first one, you know, sound like a sweet man. Part of our ad that I didn't tell you about was that we had mentioned something about if you're tired, if you've been traumatized, if you've been divorced, if she's been unkind to you. So that was partly a pretty important piece. So the first letter comes out, and the poor man had a terrible breakup. She was so cruel to him, so dishonest. And if I didn't mind an occasional bout of herpes, I was... he was my man. And, you know, I was thinking dinner and movie. I wasn't thinking sexually transmitted diseases. So that one kind of caught me by surprise. So the second letter said something of that, traumatized, yes. Divorced, yes. Occasionally emotional women, no problem. I don't care about cheese, take me, I'm yours. And I thought that was kind of cute, you know. So I called him. I mean, you know, I only had two letters. I called him. And his name was Spencer, and I hope he's not in the audience. So Spencer, I called him up, and we agreed to go have coffee at a little cafe here in town. And we started talking, and he was a very sweet man, very nice, very energetic, eager eyes, you know. And I was too young to know those signs. And so he starts talking. He says, "So what is it you're allergic to?" And I, besides cheese, and I went, "Oh, well, animals and some other foods." And I didn't really want to talk about that. I want to know more about him. So anyway, he says to me, "Well, then I won't get the rabbit." "What do you mean you won't get the rabbit?" "Well, my daughter, she wanted a rabbit. If you're allergic to animals, I'm not going to get the rabbit." "Oh, no, get the rabbit. But then he wants to go out with me again. I said, "Only if you promise to get her a rabbit." And he did, and I felt very maternal at that moment. So then we go to a midnight church service, and on the second night, and the next day he calls me and tells me he's not going to take the transfer because things seem to be working out between the two of us. And then when he wants to know how long I wanted to wait to get married, I said, "You know, I have these other letters." I kind of put it that way. You know, I was getting a little claustrophobic. And I had letters. It came to the point that if I went on a date twice a week for a year, I would not be able to meet all these men. I had letters from Lemon Creek, Spring Creek, Palmer Correctional, and Wildwood. I had letters from people out way north of Nome, and he wrote to me, and he said he didn't really care to eat cheese. He'd rather eat... That's why he lives in the mountains. I had other letters. They poured their hearts out. They wrote 8, 9, 10 pages, sent photos of them and their little girls. They were cute. And then I realized that in that joking moment, in that moment that I had thought, "Oh, how fun. Let's just go after these divorced men who have been traumatized." And I didn't realize that I wanted to respond to all of them. I started to feel really guilty. I mean, I felt, you know, here they've there's a stranger that said, "Come talk to me, let me take care of you." And I wasn't going to answer their letters because there were too many. It actually still to this day bothers me that we spent so much time enticing them in. I guess that's what women do, though. And then just leaving them alone. And these letters, I just looked at them again tonight. They were typewritten. None of them were copied. They were all unique. And Spencer, well, actually, I did put the letters away, put them in an envelope, and figured I'd deal with them someday. You know, I get around to writing thank you notes or something. And Spencer called me, and he wanted to know if I'd found anyone better. And I told him no, and I didn't expect to. So thank you.
That was Gretchen Wemhoff, and you're listening to the Arctic Countries Radio Hour on KSK Anchorage.
During this hour, we hear Alaskans tell short, 7-minute stories about their lives. On this episode, we're hearing a lot about Anchorage in celebration of the Anchorage Centennial.
And as usual, each storyteller has 7 minutes to share his or her story. You may have noticed the timer during that last story. At 5 minutes, the hosts of the Live Arctic Entry Show let storytellers know it's almost time to wrap things up. And then another timer sounds at 7 minutes to let the storytellers know it's time to make way for the next speaker. Now we'll hear from former Anchorage area wildlife biologist Jessie Coltrane. Jessie's moved out of state since she told this story, but here she'll look back at a time when her life was a bizarre balancing act of trying to keep the peace between people and wildlife in our city.
So my story begins when I was little, or young, I guess, because I'm still kind of little. But since I was young, I've always wanted to be a wildlife biologist. Except for that moment in time where I really, really, really wanted to be a truck driver, because those big black trucks with the red flames down the side, who wouldn't want to drive one of those? But anyways, when I thought about being a wildlife biologist, I envisioned myself as being the next Jane Goodall or spending my days roaming the Amazon, discovering new species of mammals. But here I am in Anchorage, being the Alaska, the Anchorage area wildlife biologist for the Alaska Department of Fish and Game. And most days it's kind of like being a terrorist negotiator. And unfortunately, the victims that you're trying to rescue are very often trying to thank you by killing you or trying to. Which leads me to the theme of my story, cheating death and bears in weird places. Bears have never tried to kill me, unless laughing to death is an actual terminal condition. I have chased bears out of garbage trucks, or garbage cans, dumpsters, grease buckets, pickup trucks laden with people's leftovers, and I've done it all with a really bad attitude and a handful of rocks. And if you're wondering, yes, I do throw like a girl. But I am a professional, so I do not recommend that you try this at home. So the weirdest place that I've ever had to deal with a bear is in the back of a garbage truck. Seriously, a garbage truck. You know, the big garbage trucks that Alaska Waste dumps your dumpsters with. So a driver for Alaska Waste had gone on his morning rounds to Whittier and dumped his dumpsters and stopped at the Essential One in Bird for a little siesta. And he was drifting off to sleep, and he heard the distinct bawling of a bear cub coming from somewhere around of his truck. So he got out to investigate, and it sounded like it was coming from inside of his truck. So sure enough, he climbed up on the back and peered in, and here was this frightened little bear cub sitting there eating somebody's old pizza. And he's like, oh no! So he calls the dispatch, and dispatch calls me, and I laugh, and I say, no problem, I'll meet you over at your compound in Anchorage, because I'm not driving down to Bird to deal with this bear. So I'm on my way over there to the Alaska Waste compound, and I'm laughing the whole way. I'm thinking, oh my God, what's the irony? You know, seriously, a bear in the back of a garbage truck. What am I going to do? But inside, I'm really scared. I'm totally terrified because I'm thinking, this is other people's trash. That is so disgusting. And these sanitation technicians are way braver than any wildlife biologist you will ever meet. So I get there, and I climb up on top of this truck. And these trucks are huge. I mean, they're big. They're garbage trucks. And they're slippery, and they're wet, and they smell like trash. And I look in, and luckily there's not a lot of trash, but there's this really suspicious-looking liquid in the bottom of the truck. I'm like, ugh, gross. And on top of the trash is this little black bear cub, you know, this little stowaway or kidnap victim, however you want to look at it. And he's sitting there looking at me, eating his pizza. I'm like, oh, great. And I'm thinking, I should get my assistant to do this. But he's kind of big, and we may never get him out. So I, with the assistance of two of the sanitation workers, I'm lowered into the bowels of the truck with the trash. It's disgusting. But there's a garbage fish tote in the bottom of the trash. I'm like, oh, thank God. So I get in it, and I'm like, yay. And I start scooting myself over to the bear cub. And the bear cub's looking at me, still eating his pizza, but now he's like, oh, what's she doing? And so Dave Battle, my assistant, tosses me down this dog kennel. It's a little kennel. It's about like this. And I've used it to carry everything from loons to porcupines. And I set it down in front of the bear cub, and I poke him with a stick. And here's a trade secret. You can make almost anything move if you poke it with a stick. And this goes for really, really, really slow-moving assistant area biologists like Dave Battle. Or really obstinate moose. And I'm not saying that they're not going to kick you in the face afterwards, but both of them will move. So I'd like to think that this bear cub looked at me and was like, oh, she's here to save me and take me back to my mommy. And that's why he walked straight into the kennel and I shut the door. But I'm pretty sure that it's because I poked him really hard in the butt with this stick. So now I had a bear cub and a cat kennel. Yay! Success. The end. End of story. But actually, no, it's not the end. I did take him back to Whittier, where I reunited him with his mommy, and you would think that was the end. But no, it's not the end. Because what is weirder than kidnapping a bear with your garbage truck? Doing it twice. Seriously, a year later, I get a call from Alaska Waste Dispatch. They got another bear in the back of a garbage truck. same truck, same driver, same dumpster in Whittier. I'm seriously, I have a seriously overactive imagination. I cannot make this stuff up. So I run down to Alaska Waste, but this time it's an adult female bear, and the garbage truck is full of trash. So obviously I'm not going to get down into this garbage truck or shove this bear into a cat kennel. But luckily, to make a long story short, with the help of a couple very hardy research biologists, Sean Farley and Tony Carnahan, we dart the bear, and that involves drugs that will knock you out, as well as a bear. And then we proceed to dump the entire contents of the garbage truck onto the ground at the Alaska Waste compound, including our kidnapped victim. And the bear had gorged herself so completely on trash that she was so bloated that we actually thought something was wrong with her. But she was fine, and we went ahead and moved her to a more appropriate location for a bear. And at the beginning, I told you that I was going to talk about cheating death in addition to bears in weird places. And I heard the harmonica a while ago, so I'm probably running out of time. And honestly, in the last 12 years of doing this job, I cannot seriously remember all of the near misses I've had dealing with wildlife, because wildlife can be very dangerous, and people are terrifying. And my job deals with people. But it was the one time that I almost met my maker was not caused by a bear, it was not caused by a wolf or a moose or a ranting crazy homeowner who had left their trash out, or a gangster in Muldoon toting a piece, but that was really, really scary and I thought I was going to die. It was a raven. Yes, the harbinger of death. Classic. So Rick Sennett and I had picked up this badly injured raven, and we were taking it to Bird Treatment and Learning Center for treatment. And I thought, man, I want to make this a better situation for this little guy, so I start feeding him Cheetos, because I love Cheetos and ravens love Cheetos. And for the gratitude he showed me was biting me on my knuckle. And it wasn't a bad bite. 2 days later, I woke up with a swollen hand, red line shooting all the way up to my armpit, and a raging case of septicemia. Evidently, ravens have dirty, dirty mouths. So, in the end, I had to fill out a workers' comp form, and they ask you, what could you do to avoid this situation from happening in the future? And I said, I will never share my Cheetos again.
That was Jesse Coltrane in December of 2013. And you're listening to the Arctic Countries Radio Hour on KSKA Anchorage. I'm Rosie Robards.
And I'm Jason Brandeis. At each live event, we also feature songs from a local musician.
Born and raised in Alaska, here's Michael Howard with a little something silly.
This next one is another true story, a story of love and heartbreak, and a pair of brown rubber boots that happened right here in Alaska. So thanks, guys. Well, I saw her walking down the street. That girl was pretty as could be. A short denim skirt and wavy hair. My eyes just could not help but stare. It was 72 degrees, not a cloud in sight. And there's her feet wrapped up so warm and waterproof. She caught me with my mouth hanging open wide, yeah. Well, don't you know you gotta love that double-dipped brown neoprene. Dressed for business from the waist up, the only skin she's showing is her knees. It's a true story, guys. Well, it didn't make much sense at first. Was she all dressed up and headed to work downtown making coffee in the art gallery? I wonder if she fishes commercially. Well, I don't care what she does. Just keep on doing what you're doing to me. Cause I'm so sure that I'm in love with that two-tone brown boot magic on your feet. Well, don't you know you gotta love that double-dipped brown neoprene. Dressed for business from the waist up, the only skin she's showing is her knees. And when I look down at her feet, oh, I know she must be wild and rough. I can't get enough of that girl in extra tough. Well, she's rambling round Alaska, from California to Ketchikan. But from Bristol Bay to Barrow, you'll try to catch her if you can. But she'll steal your heart in Juneau, Sitka, Seward, and Homer too. Or a storytelling event somewhere in Anchorage. Rubber boots, why don't you walk me home with you? Yeah, so folks, as I mentioned, it's all a true story here. A couple years ago, I was working on this song, and something awful tragic happened right in the middle of the song. And I was like, man, I'm not going to be able to finish this song. What do I do? So I had to divert course completely to tell the rest of the story. So, true story. Here's what happens next. Well, I went down to Costco in Anchorage where I heard they were on sale. I hoped maybe she might like me. So I went and I bought myself a pair. But she saw me in my brand new pair of brown, shiny rubber boots, and she looked me up and down. She looked down at my feet, and she said, She looked at me, and she was all like, She said, oh, Michael. She said, your boots were made in China. They'll only fall apart. She left me standing there with my pair of busted rubbers, two wet feet, and a broken heart. But hey, don't you know you gotta love that double-dipped brown neoprene? Dressed for business from the waist up, the only skin she's showing is her knees. And when I look down at her feet, oh, I know she must be wild and rough. I can't get enough of that brown boot, loving short skirt, tall boots. And my heart starts thumping, we'll dance all night. And we'll go puddle jumping, cause I can't get enough of that girl in extra tufts. Thank you, guys.
You're listening to Arctic Entries on KSK Anchorage. Thank you, Michael Howard. Now for more true stories told by Alaskans.
Linda Lucky is a retired art teacher and artist from New York, and you may have seen her at the Anchorage Museum, where she has been a docent for 11 years.
Maybe we should tell people what it means to be a docent?
Good call. I only know the answer because I was at the show where Linda told her story, and she explained what a docent is. A docent is basically a volunteer who serves as a guide at a museum or an art gallery. Here's Linda on the Arctic Entries stage in November 2014.
Hey, how could I know, how could I ever dream that I would be in a place that was so far off my radar and it would become my destiny? I'm a metro girl. I crave the city. I crave art. I'm an artist. I used to art teach as my career. And I need excitement. I need sunshine. And I need shopping. How could I realize that I'd be in a place where 1,000-pound animals wander freely all over the place? And kayaks, they're a death trap. You get a kayak, you get it in that frigid water, it turns over, you are dead in 10 minutes. I don't mountain climb, I get nervous on a seesaw. The glaciers are beautiful, but seen one, you've seen them all. No, not in my wildest dreams. In 1997, my daughter moves to Anchorage, my daughter Lee. And I told my friends in New York, I am going to Anchorage for the holidays. And they said, does the plane land in December? I said, better, my ticket says Anchorage, I'm getting off there. The first thing I did, I went to the Anchorage Museum. And I had lunch in a beautiful art gallery. It was the coolest, most elegant thing I could do as an introduction to the city. Then I was there for 2 weeks with my daughter, and Alaskana was coming out of my ears. First, it was 20 below. There was frost everywhere. It was gorgeous. And then inside the cozy house on Christmas Day, guess what the marathon was on television? Northern Exposure. It was great. And Mattel that Christmas even made Alaskan Barbies. The last thing I did before I went back to New York, I had one more year to teach, I went on a sled dog ride. They put me on this sled. I was low. I was right behind the tail of the last dog. Off they went, racing, barking, passing gas the whole time. It was like Rusty the Horse on Seinfeld. All that extra beefarino. 5 years passed, and then my daughter sends me a very provocative email. She goes, Mom, how would you like to come to Alaska? 1 year, put your stuff in storage in New York, come for a year, I need backup. I want to get a doctorate degree. And I said, how much backup are we talking? She says, 2 nights, a few hours each. I said, I'll get back to you. And I'm thinking, hey, I'm retired 4 years now. And then I did a lot of traveling. I needed an adventure. So I emailed her right back and I said, I can do this. Then I started thinking, whoa, I'm going to have fun. What'll I do? My fantasy 1 year in Anchorage. I'll go to a hotel and I'll have room service. And then I said, where am I going to put my clothes? They don't have any closets. So then I thought, oh, B&Bs. I called them. I thought they had more closets. They said, we don't rent long term. So then my daughter and I said, okay, we're going to buy a house. She says, we'll get a duplex. I said, great. There are certain things that are deal breakers. I am not coming and scraping ice for 6 months. I am going to lead a civilized life. I am also not going to be in the boonies. I need civilization. I want hospitals, theaters, and stores. And then, of course, neither one of us do hills. So the driveways had to be flat, the streets are flat, and the roads around the community are flat. And then about the windows. Gotta be windows. You know, I knew about the dark and light. I'd been up enough to know. And I said, I hadn't had a philosophy. The light you seek is the light you have to carry with you. That, and get a great electrician, and you got it made. So we went out. She went. She got us a house. It was a duplex on the east side. It had everything in it we needed. And then she moved in August, and I went home to the island, and I was packing. I remember coming up. September 16th, 2002. It was 9:30 p.m. I was wearing a two-piece gray ensemble with matching gray Nikes and little gray earring, a red earring, heart, that I, one was here, one was lost on the plane. My daughter drove me to the house and was very, very nervous because my apartment wasn't ready. She thought, I'm going to go right back on that plane and go to New York. Of course I didn't. The apartment was a kick. I put beaded curtains around. I put a restaurant booth in the kitchen, and I had two extra bedrooms. They were small, so I could play with them. I made them into closets for my clothes. Don't you just love a window in your closet? As soon as, day after New Year's, I called the museum. I said, hey, I'm an art teacher, 31 years in New York. I'm new in town. I want to give tours. They said, without hesitation, come on down. Well, here I am, 13 years later. I never knew until I moved here how much I love snow and how eccentric I was. I was surrounded by fellow eccentrics. This place is eccentric. It's people, it's land, it's weather, it's light. It was a perfect fit. I remember two ladies at the pack once. They were standing looking into the orchestra pit on a break. And one was wearing a ball gown, and one looked like she came in from a tractor pull. I said, it's all good. You know, forget it, the last frontier on the plate. That's space. You know what should be on the license plate? Alaska. It's all good. Now, you know, some people say to me, hey, you're from New York. I could tell. You're East Coast. You're New York. And I cut them off at the pass because I know just where they're going. And I say to them, no. It's you guys that have the accent, not me.
That was Linda Lucky on the Arctic Entries Radio Hour.
Each month, the Arctic Entries Storyboard works with 7 Alaskans to share their stories. Anyone may volunteer to tell a story at the Arctic Entries live show. For more on that, visit arcticentries.com.
Vic Fisher has been active in Alaska for 65 years. He's one of Alaska's founding fathers and was Anchorage's first planning director. So he's had a lot to say about how Anchorage has shaped up over time. Here's Vic Fisher live at the Snow Goose Theater in Anchorage as part of our Sourdough Show in April 2012.
Thank you. I've been sitting here listening to lots of good storytellers, clowns, actors, whatever, and wondering what I should talk about. At one point, I was telling somebody during intermission, I had this thought of telling about doing kayaking off West Chichagof Island, north of Sitka, and being eye to eye with a whale, with a humpback, with an eye like this, about this far, virtually, maybe two arms length away from me, one of the great thrills of my life. Nothing funny about it, it was just a lifetime experience. Anyway, I'm going to tell you quickly about coming to Alaska, what brought me here. I was on a troop ship during World War II, crossing the Atlantic on the way to France. We were in a convoy of about 150 ships, and it took us 2 weeks across because the convoy went at the speed of the slowest of the ships, and those were tankers. And we had troop ships in the middle and cargo ships and tankers and then whatever, and minesweepers and destroyers on the outside dropping depth charges, keeping the U-boats away. Anyway, it was a long trip, and after I got over being seasick first couple of days in the North Atlantic storm, I started thinking, okay, what do I want to do with myself when I get back, and where do I want to do it? And I had gone to the University of Wisconsin before I enlisted, and enrolled as in electrical engineering department, and I'd always thought that's what I would pursue because as a kid I always played with electricity and building magnets and coils and this and that and so on. I once wired my desk so that if my brother tried to get into a drawer, he'd get a shock. As I was ruminating about my future, I decided I really want to do something more than engineering. I want to have more of a social purpose in my life. And so I went in the ship's library and went through a bunch of books, and a great one was Space, Time, and Architecture. And I thought, architecture, well, that's my technical side. It's for people. As I read the book, I discovered there's a field such as city planning. Well, that's what I decided. I'd be a city planner. And in the library, I also started reading books about the states because I had come from the East Coast to Wisconsin. I liked going west, so I thought, well, I'll go all the way west. And, so I read about Oregon, and I skipped California. I went to Oregon, state of Washington, and there was a series of books on the states and the territories, and reading about Tacoma and Seattle and so on, I found there's a place even further away, and that's Alaska. And so I got the Alaska book, and I was sold. So I was going to be a city planner in Alaska. And after the war, I wrote a letter to the University of Alaska up near Fairbanks, and I asked them if they had a degree program in architecture. Well, the University of Alaska still doesn't have that. They said we have civil engineering and mining and agriculture and English and whatever else. And it was a nice handwritten letter. And they said, you might try University of Washington, which I did. And they weren't taking out-of-state students because there were so many veterans coming back under the GI Bill, which was what was going to finance my education. So I went back to Wisconsin, created my own program as a foundation for planning, went off to MIT to get a graduate degree, and when I was finishing there, planning was just coming into popular fore, and I had lots of job offers. I couldn't decide which one to take. Alaska was not in my horizon at that point. And one day there was a notice on the job board, Town Planner for Alaska, Bureau of Land Management, and sort of my dreams were realized. All of a sudden, Alaska was there. My wife and I went to Philadelphia, we were living in Pennsylvania, got fixed up to go up to the Arctic, and we got 10 records that we couldn't live without for the next few years. Camped all the way across the country and up the Alaska Highway, which was in pretty horrible shape, and I haven't even gotten started yet. I get to Anchorage on the one street that was paved, Fourth Avenue, and lo and behold, we stop in front of the federal building that's now the old federal building, and there's a parking meter next to us, and across the street is a beautiful, large record store in the Reed Building next to the Fourth Avenue Theater. Anyway, we ended up living in a outside the city limits converted garage, 14 by 22 little cabin with an oil cook stove in one corner, chemical toilet in the other, and carried water in from the neighbors, and it was heaven. It was just ideal as life could be. Anchorage City had 11,000 people then. The area had 30,000, including a lot of military at the time. I was going to tell you a story, except for that harmonica over there, about the first week going off to Nularo, going out to the bush and getting to experience a village in my first days in Alaska, and then flying back in a very small plane, and clouds coming down over the mountains, and we wandered around and ended up in Galena and got stuck for 3 days, and I learned a lot about what Alaska life is like, including the patience of traveling in Alaska. It was fabulous. Alaska lived up to everything I expected, except for one downside, that was the fact that by coming to Alaska, I was no longer a full-fledged citizen of the United States. I was in the territory of Alaska. I had voted for president already, for U.S. senator, for voting members of Congress, and having been in a war to save the world for democracy, or whatever we call a good war in those days. And here I was, and that's how I got involved in statehood, and went to the Constitutional Convention and did lots of fascinating things, and it's been a good life, and I'm delighted to see such a fabulous turnout. Thank you.
That was Vic Fisher on the Arctic Entries Radio Hour. Our last musician for this show is Emma Hill. She grew up in Sleipmute, but has spent a lot of time in Anchorage over the last several years, and sings about her love for our state just about any chance she gets.
Here's Emma Hill with her song, Denali.
I was meant to roam over land and sea. I was meant to climb high on mountain peaks. I was meant to search the word I know is true. That's right, finding all that's good. I've seen many things, the lights that shine and bearers like a dream. The bus in Costa Rica buzzes noisily, and it still takes my breath away to see Denali. I was meant to live with fire. To fade, light out in the dark. I was meant to hold the world would somehow see path to better days, a path to finding.
That was Emma Hill on the Arctic Entries Radio Hour.
It's time for our last storyteller for this special hour of Arctic Entries Radio. It's been wonderful to take time to celebrate Inkertown, the city of lights, the city of flowers, the most populous city in this great state.
Anchorage is 100 years old, and one of the most significant events in our history is the 1964 Great Alaska Earthquake.
Here's storyteller Betty Arnett to bring this hour to a close and provide a glimpse into that day in our history.
There they were, all three of them, sitting on the floor watching television instead of getting ready for company, company that I was expecting through that front door at any minute. Oh, I yelled at those kids. the things I have to put up with. And then suddenly, Mother Nature yelled back, "Lady, you ain't seen nothing yet." For the strongest earthquake ever to hit the North American continent at 8.6 on the Earth Richter scale had begun. And the water in the inlet clay mixed with the soil underneath the foundations of the houses in Turnagain by the sea had just turned to jello. And we were all being shaken back and forth and up and down and back and forth and on and on and on. We thought it would never stop. And as I ran through my house with my three small children to join my neighbors who were all standing out on the street, the middle of the street of Iliamna, I glanced out my kitchen window and I saw the house behind me, which was a two-story house, slowly sinking into the earth, just like that. And when I got out on Iliamna, I said to my neighbors, "What is it? What is it? Why is everybody staring at my house?" And they said, "Well, turn around and look." And that's when I saw that my backyard had fallen into the earth 40 feet. It was March the 27th, 1964, and it was Good Friday. But there was nothing good about it, because down the street, and we didn't realize this at the time, two of my neighbors were taking their groceries from the car, and suddenly their driveway just opened up, and they both fell in. And then when the earth came back together, she was caught up to here, and he was caught up to the top of his legs. Well, needless to say, she died. But his life was saved, but he lost his legs. And behind me, I kept hearing this voice, familiar voice. It was almost like a chant saying, "Is this it? Is this it? Do you think this is it?" And I turned around and I saw my neighbor, Mr. Rottrup, from across the street. He was one of the administrators for Shell Oil Company. And his face was white and his eyes were glazed over. And he said, "Is this the second coming?" And I said, "No, no, Mr. Rottrup, it's just a quake, a big quake." And then reality came back into his face and his eyes unglazed, and he quickly picked up my seven-year-old, April, who was standing in the snow doing this. She was trying to keep her feet warm, for you see, there wasn't time to get boots or shoes or coats or anything. And I was carrying my six-year-old Heather in my arms because she was clad only in a bathrobe. And my little three-year-old Hans, thank goodness, was completely dressed. And Mr. Rottrup took my children and he put them in his car with his family, turned on the heater to keep them warm. And then his wife insisted that I take her coat because I felt I should remain there on Iliamna, hoping that my husband, Russ, would come home at any minute. And as I stood there on 4 Acre and Iliamna, I looked out at my neighbors who lived in those houses on the bluff behind me. And they were all trying to come forward. None of their houses were standing erect. They were all leaning far to the left or far to the right. And they were trying to make their way through all of that mud and muck and inlet clay, trying to get up onto the firm ground of Iliamna. And suddenly, I heard a voice from down the street calling my name. And I looked, and I saw that it was a friend of my husband. It was Bob La Follette. And Bob ran up to me, and he said, "Betty, I didn't expect to see you alive. I came down Susitna View driveway, and suddenly there was no more road. And Iliamna was still a block away. And I have Russ with me." "You do? Well, where is he?" And then he began to chuckle. Now, the earth is falling in all around us, and this man finds something funny to chuckle about? And he said, "Oh, Betty, I don't quite know how to tell you this, but Russ doesn't have any clothes on." "What? Why?" And then he explained to me that Russ was taking a steam bath in the Anchorage Athletic Club. And it was located below the street level on 4th Avenue. And when the quake hit, rather than take a chance on being crushed alive by the everything falling in on him, he ran up the stairs to 4th Avenue, stark naked. And as he was telling me this story, over his shoulder, I saw a lone figure making his way up Iliamna. And he had on an overcoat down to his ankles and a pair of galoshes. And to me, that was the sweetest sight I would ever see, because then I knew that my entire family had made it through that horrible quake of 1964.
That was Betty Arnett, and this has been the Arctic Entries Radio Hour.
Thanks for tuning in. To hear these stories again or to share them with friends, visit arcticentries.com or alaskapublic.org. We also have a special Anchorage Stories playlist on our site.
The website also has information about upcoming themes, live shows, and details on how you too could tell a story.
We'd like to thank our storyboard, the storytellers for this show, and our musical guests, Jared Woods, Michael Howard, and Emma Hill. All the proceeds from our shows are donated to a local social services nonprofit. Information about this is at arcticentries.com.
Thanks to our audio engineer from the Alaska Teen Media Institute, Kendall Stormo, and to Anchorage's own Super Saturated Sugar Strings for our theme music.
This episode of the Arctic Entries Radio Hour was funded by the Alaska Humanities Forum and the Rasmussen Foundation in celebration of the Anchorage Centennial.
This has been the Arctic Entries Radio Hour on KSKA Anchorage. I'm Jason Brandeis.
And I'm Rosie Robards. Thanks for listening, and we look forward to hearing your stories.
We'll just have to see what movie will be. We can swim or sink in our new beginning. Oh, I'll just let it be. No more inquiry.